Welcome on into this edition of the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle Podcast from the Fricker Studios. Lance Morris, Matt Common here for your pre-New Year's podcast listening pleasure. And I couldn't find the old intro, so I just decided to wing it. I hope that's okay.
You know, in time, I'm going to learn to forgive you because I really liked that old intro. I thought it was a pretty good intro that they did for us. I mean, they even mentioned my name, which made me really happy. So...
Is there any reason really to mention your name? I mean, come on.
There's lots of reasons to mention my name. I mean, first of all, it's the fact that I am just a legend in the broadcasting community.
In your own mind, but continue.
Part of the Mount Rushmore of radio personalities throughout history.
Wrong.
Well, no, I'm part of it. I mean, I'm pretty sure I like scraped my knee looking at the Mount Rushmore of radio personalities at some point.
That sounds more like it.
But, no, I mean, yeah, we can wing it. Why not? It's 2020. This is the series finale of the NWO Sports Huddle Podcast for the 2020 disaster movie that was this year. So, why not? Let's close it with some improv.
Okay. We'll be joined by Kevin Harris from 11warriors.com here in just a few minutes. The Buckeyes, they'll play in the college football playoff on New Year's Day for the second straight season. They will be taking on Clemson. We'll talk with Kevin in just a few minutes here on the show. And Matt, before we do that, there's something we need to get off our chest. And we talked about it a little bit at our game last night. We have some things to say about the NFL.
Yes, we do. Yeah, I have lots of things to say about the NFL.
So I'll get things started by saying, I don't think there's another way to say it, but they completely dropped the ball by allowing the Browns to play a game without their top four wide receivers, without some of their linemen as well. And this is not the first time we've talked about this either. So it's not as if it's just because it's the Browns that we're mentioning it, but we said it, you know, the Broncos played a game without a quarterback who was on their roster a couple days prior. They pushed back games for... basically, it seemed like forever when, you know, the Titans had their issues, when the Ravens and the Steelers, they were supposed to play on Thanksgiving. That game ended up getting pushed back all the way to a Wednesday afternoon game because of the Christmas tree lighting taking priority on NBC. I mean, I just don't understand how you allow that to happen.
Well, I don't have any good commentary to say, so I'll just jump right into it. As I usually ask first, Lance, may I be let off the leash on this one?
I suppose.
Okay, the NFL is 100% rigging it so the Cleveland Browns don't make the playoffs, because if the Browns make the playoffs, it throws off the BS narrative that the NFL has been trying to orchestrate of Lamar Jackson versus Pat Mahomes as being the new generation Brady versus Manning. That is what I hate about this. There is no logical reason on this godforsaken nomadic wasteland of a planet that 2020 has turned this planet into, that the Denver Broncos should have had to play their game when all of their quarterbacks got COVID restricted within 48 hours of kickoff, when the Browns had two entire position groups, whole position groups, all of their wide receivers, their four active wide receivers on their game day roster, had to quarantine. Two of their four active linebackers had to quarantine. Had to. There's nothing else they could do. And look, here's what I'm going to say. The one thing I'm going to say about this, because of the fact there is a positive test with B.J. Goodson for the Cleveland Browns, am I, pardon my language here, but am I pissed as all get out at the NFL? Yes. Do I think the Browns did everything they could to do their best in their game against the Jets? Yes, that was an uphill sled for the Browns. I am not upset at them, and obviously I want nothing more than these people to be healthy and get back to the field. But the fact that the Ravens game, it basically boiled down to, oh, I have a cough. Also, we tried covering it up, so we're going to get fined $250,000 later on in the season because of it. The NFL's response, oh, it's okay, Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. We'll reschedule your game like 17 times to make sure that you can still play your primetime game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, oh, Pittsburgh, you are running into some COVID-related issues, which you're also about to get fined because you were hiding it from people. Okay, we'll make sure that we move your schedule around. But the Browns, oh, the Browns, we love having the Browns be terrible. The Browns stink. We can use them as a joke, as an insult, as a punchline throughout the NFL because no one likes Cleveland. And, you know, pardon me again for saying it, but screw the Browns. We don't like them. They were salty when they left for Baltimore, so let's make sure they suffer. What's that? Oh, four of their receivers are out. Two of their linebackers are going to have to isolate. Yeah, you guys are fine. You should still be able to play that game, no problem. It's ridiculous. I'd say it's a testament to how good the Browns are that with spare parts from the freaking parking lot the day before the game, they were able to get within 15 yards of tying that game against the Jets. Are the Jets a good team? No. Did the Jets have 15 weeks of being a coherent unit together, though, that gave them the advantage of that game? Absolutely. So for my money, no. The NFL is rigging this. It's disgusting what they're doing, how they're doing it, and how blatantly they are doing it, because they want nothing more than Lamar Jackson versus Pat Mahomes in the postseason every year. So to all the listeners out there, I'm calling it right now. Expect some nonsense for the next 4 to 5 years when it comes to the Ravens making the playoffs. And don't be the least bit surprised if that nonsense usually leads to some matchup with the Kansas City Chiefs, because that is what the NFL is just drooling over, is the chance to make a new Brady versus Manning. And for my money, they're picking the wrong Manning between Mahomes and Jackson. Mahomes being Brady as I think just the better odds of winning the Super Bowl consistently. They are picking the wrong Manning. It should not be Lamar Jackson that they're trying to hype up. It simply should not. And I'm going to go ahead and say this too. As a Baker homer, it shouldn't be Baker Mayfield either. I'll tell you, it should be Josh Allen. Josh Allen is over 4,000 yards passing, 35 touchdowns, and only somewhere in the ballpark of, I think, 6 or 7 INTs. Why is the NFL not trying to hype the living hell out of this kid who is coming out of nowhere to be a star coming from Wyoming, leads Buffalo to the AFC East title, or AFC East title, gets them their best record they've had in years? The NFL is dropping the ball by picking, for my money, a good quarterback that I think is going to be more of a flash in the pan as the years play out, because scrambling quarterbacks do not have a great shelf life, versus a kid that, for all intents and purposes, could be Peyton Manning. We don't know. He looks phenomenal. He's continued to develop and continues to look good as his career has gone on. So am I salty? Oh, hell yes. I am 100% salt for the NFL making Cleveland play that game. And I think their reasoning behind it is dumb. I think what is their blatant hidden motive is even dumber, though.
Of course, if I were to play devil's advocate.
Please do. I'm in that zone right now, Dave, man.
As much as I agree with pretty much everything you just said, one thing that the Browns could have done, they could have beat Baltimore a couple weeks ago, and then this solves itself.
Absolutely. And you know what? I will own this part as a Browns fan 100%. Cleveland being in a win and they're in situation in week 17 is 100% their own doing, because at the end of the day, I know Coach Stefanski mentioned no excuses about this Jets game, and that's fair. The Jets are the second worst team in the NFL. If you're a good team, even in this extreme adversity, you should be able to win, or at least find a way to win. And they pretty much did. They got very close to doing it, but very close doesn't count in the NFL. But I wouldn't even say the Baltimore game is the one that gets me when you look at the Browns season is that Las Vegas Raiders game.
Yeah.
That if you want to talk about a game boiling down to one, or a season boiling down to one game, that Las Vegas Raiders game that the Browns just offensively could not get anything done. And I know the wind was terrible. The elements were just horrific for both teams in that game. It didn't stop the team that plays in the dome. It stopped the team that played outside. That game alone is one where even all this nonsense and crap that the NFL is putting the Browns through, it all could have been avoided just by winning that one game. It really could have. So there's a little part of this that it is what it is. And the Browns really have no one to blame but themselves that they are in this win and you're in, or lose and you need to pray that somehow Jacksonville beats Indianapolis, which, come on, that's just not going to happen unless Indianapolis is resting all their starters. It's they have no one to blame but themselves. But that does not excuse how blatantly obvious the NFL is trying to skew the schedule, skew the games, skew the way things are being organized and set up to make it that Baltimore gets in again. It's just you can't convince me otherwise. I'm that meme of the dude sitting behind the table saying, blah, 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 change my mind. This is the NFL's rigging it to make Mahomes, Jackson, the new Brady, Manning. Change my mind.
Yeah, you look at the playoff picture on who is already in and who's not in. As far as the AFC, Chiefs already got the top seed. The Bills have the second seed, presumably. It's between them and Pittsburgh for who ultimately gets the two seed, but the other one's going to get the three. So they already know where they are going to line up. The Titans, as of now, they're in. If they win, they would win the AFC South, and they would have that on the other teams in the South. The Dolphins, they're also in the hunt. They're second in the AFC East, of course, behind Buffalo. And then you have the Ravens, and you have the Browns in for those other spots. And that's one thing to remember is the playoffs. Each league adds a team this year, at the very least for this year, and it could be explored for years going ahead. But at least that's the case for this year. And yes, the Browns do in fact control their own destiny. Problem is they have to face a Steelers team that, you know, despite having those couple rough weeks, were able to get back in the win column last week. So we'll have to see what happens for that. But I mean, if you're the Browns, I mean, you also are probably at least hoping a little bit that the Steelers know that they're going to either be the 2 or the 3 seed. It really doesn't matter unless you look at matchup purposes or things of that nature, because only the top seed gets a bye this year. It's not the first and second seeds getting a bye. It's only that top seed. They already know Kansas City is going to be that. So there is the chance that they don't play some of their guys, at least maybe the whole game. Maybe it's only a half or what it could be. But I mean, you're the Browns. You have to find a way to win this game against a team that you historically have not beaten very often.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I'll go ahead and say this much, knowing the Pittsburgh Steelers, knowing Mike Tomlin, the fact that they were going into this game against Indianapolis on, what, a 4-game losing streak, I believe it was, at that point? Four straight losses for them?
It was three.
Or three, I'm sorry, three straight losses. But here's the thing. I think they're going to play all their people, because they were so out of rhythm for those three games. I don't think they can afford to give their guys a rest. And on a separate note for that one, for Kansas City resting their starters, I really don't think that's a good idea either. You look back over the years of teams that have rested their starters week 17 that have had the bye, that gives their guys 2 weeks off of time from being hit, of time from going into high contact situations. Historically, those teams that have taken the 2 weeks off do not win in the next round. They just don't. I mean, you can look back to even the last year. Each team that sat their players in week 17 lost in their first round of the postseason, or their first respective round of the postseason. So I think Kansas City shouldn't be doing that. I would love for Pittsburgh to do that, because I think if the Browns win, matchup-wise, I think we end up playing Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh. It could be that or Buffalo. I don't know for sure offhand which one we'd be going against. But, yeah, I don't think they're going to pull their starters. I hope they do. I would love nothing more than for them to pull their starters. But I'll also say this is a different Browns team than the last time the Steelers played them. This is a very different team. I mean, last Sunday aside, with having eight players out of the game 48 hours before kickoff, this is a very different team. They're high scoring. They got an offense that is clicking and gelling, and it's going to gel again because Jarvis Landry is going to be back for this game. Donovan Peoples-Jones, Rashard Higgins, they'll be back. They won't have to make the tight ends a 30 pass attempt tight end core anymore. They'll be able to spread it out because Jedrick Wills will be back on the line. Wyatt Teller, God willing, will be back at right guard for the Browns as well. Nick Harris is serviceable, but he's not Wyatt Teller. So this team has a lot more going for it than it did the last time they played Pittsburgh. And I'll say, controlling their own destiny, this should be a winnable game for the Browns. It should be a very, very winnable game. Because this Pittsburgh team, even though they were able to string it together against Indianapolis, they're still a bit of a mess. I mean, they don't really have the running game going yet. I know the passing defense has been a bit of a weak spot for us, for the Browns this year. But Ben Roethlisberger has looked very human the past couple weeks. And that includes last week's game. I mean, he had a good end to the game. But it took him a while to get warmed up. And respectfully to the Indianapolis defensive line, they're not Myles Garrett. So it's a winnable game. I think the Browns can win it. I actually do have the Browns winning the game. I think it'll be close. I have it by either a touchdown or a field goal. But I think they're going to win the game. I don't think the Steelers are going to pull their starters, but I do think they're going to let the dogs off a little bit, like call off the dogs a little bit. Because they want to get ready for the next week in the wild card, which could be, again, against Cleveland. So I view it as the Steelers are going to probably try and play a little bit of money ball and say, well, if given our choice, we'd rather have Cleveland or Miami as opposed to Baltimore or Tennessee or Indianapolis again. So I think the Browns will win it. I think it'll be close, and I think the Browns are going to break the playoff drought. But the NFL this year has caused so many unnecessary headaches, and the nonsense that they pulled with the Browns last week is going to be the cream of the crop level headache.
Yeah, you look at the teams in the postseason contention for the AFC, it's going to be four of the five teams between the Titans, Dolphins, Ravens, Browns, and Colts, and it presumably will come down to if the Titans win their game. They take on the Texans. The Texans obviously have not looked very good aside from that really Thanksgiving shellacking of the Lions. But the Bills, I mean, the Bills have clinched their spot, but they could do some damage to the Dolphins in that playoff picture as well, because all of those teams are 10-5 outside of the teams that have already clinched their division. So seeding for those teams still very much up in the air, and then trying to decide which of those four teams will end up making the postseason. So hopefully we'll have more clarity on that as this week progresses, obviously, once we have week 17 and all of that in the books. And that will be our first football weekend of the professional level in 2021. But with that, we'll step aside for a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll talk with Kevin Harish from 11warriors.com here on the NWO Orthopedics Sports Auto Podcast from the Fricker Studios.
Freaking chicken chunks, freaking chicken chunks, freaking chicken chunks, freaking chicken chunks. $29.99 gets you 4 pounds of freaking chicken chunks. Don't forget the four sauces too. Don't forget the four sauces too. Four sauces too.
Chunks. Ring in the season with 4 pounds of frickin' chicken chunks. Buy a $25 Frickers gift card and get 5 frickin' bonus bucks free. The ho-ho home for fun, food, sports, and spirits is Frickers.
Frickin' chicken chunks, 4 sauces, 2 frickin' chicken chunks, 4 frickin' pounds, frickin' chicken chunks.
Hello, I'm Dr. Bruce Heck, board-certified orthopedic surgeon. I started Northwest Ohio Orthopedics and Sports Medicine in 2001 to provide comprehensive, experienced team approach to the care of musculoskeletal disorders. Experience and knowledge with a team that understands your needs in a compassionate manner is what Northwest Ohio Orthopedics is about. At NWO, we take care of our patients as we would our own family. Remember, there's only one place to go, NWO.
Welcome back on into the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle here from the Frickers Studios. Lance Morris, Matt Common here with you today. We are now pleased to be joined by Kevin Harris from 11warriors.com. The Buckeyes play in the college football playoffs. They take on Clemson on Friday on New Year's Day. Pregame starts at 6:30. Kickoff comes around 8 o'clock. You can hear that on WFOB on New Year's Day. We talked last week about everything relating to Dabo Swinney. We'll probably still talk about him a little bit, but last week we had our deep dive on him. So if you missed that, go back and check out last week's episode. Kevin, how are we doing?
Pretty good. How about you guys?
Good. Thank you. Thank you as always for taking the time to talk with us. And we, you know, talked about everything but the game really last week. And we know Clemson has been, you know, one of the powers in college football, you know, particularly in the college football playoff era. It is more or less been Clemson and Bama being at the top, or 1 and 2 at the top. What should we know really about this particular version of the Clemson team, though?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot the same team. You know, it's the same primary cast of characters. You've got Trevor Lawrence led by or Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne leading the way. But I think generally, kind of like Ohio State, it's just honestly, a less talented or less star-studded version of last year's team. You've got the same primary people, but, you know, I think at receiver, there's no really star power on Clemson's side of the ball. That doesn't mean the guys aren't talented, but, you know, last year Clemson had some of the top receivers and big names in the country. Same with the defensive line. It's still a talented defensive line, but, you know, you don't have the Clemson pass rush that you're really used to seeing. They've still got guys like Brian Brzee. You know, that doesn't mean they're not talented. They're one of the most talented teams in the country, but I think it's just kind of like Ohio State, how Ohio State is entering this game still talented, but without guys like Chase Young or Jeff Okuda or Damon Arnett. You know, it's slightly different. It's just a different version of a Clemson team with different strengths, really.
And Kevin, you mentioned some of those different strengths, and the one that I look at, you mentioned him, Travis Etienne. The way he's been running the ball this year, even in a couple instances of Trevor Lawrence not being in the game due to positive COVID tests and COVID protocols throughout the season, you really got to see what Etienne can do as the primary driver of this offense. And when you look at this Ohio State team, defensively, you could make the argument one of the few areas of consistent strength has been our defensive line over the years. And this year, that being, for the most part, the same topic, that the defensive line kind of drives most of what happens for us defensively. How do you see that matchup going between Etienne and this run blocking that Clemson has shown off this year versus our defensive line and what they're going to be capable of?
Yeah, I think you mentioned, like, for the most part, that's still been Ohio State strength. The defensive line has been Ohio State strength. That's just been a different part of the defensive line. You know, Ohio State's used to having these incredible pass rushers like Nick Bosa and, you know, Chase Young, Joey Bosa, guys like that. This year, the strength is really on the inside with Haskell Garrett and Tommy Togiai. And that's really helped with stopping the run. You know, Ohio State, for all the struggles that they've had in the passing game, you know, they're frankly near the bottom of the Big Ten in pass defense, but they've been great at stopping the run. You know, you even look against Indiana finished that game with negative rushing yards. And, you know, and to that point, Clemson has shown that, they'll allow you to shut down Travis Etienne in the running game. Like, that's happened many times this season. You know, you look at how he performed in that first loss to Notre Dame. Notre Dame was really able to shut down the run, and Ohio State has been able to do that. So I think that's going to be a key to the game, is Ohio State needs to do what it does well, and that is stop the run. And I really think Ohio State is built to stop the run, the way that they their talent stacks up with that talent on the interior defensive line with Togiai and Garrett, and then a veteran linebacking core. You know, you're going to have Tough Borland, Pete Warner, and Justin Hilliard is gonna be the that trio right there. And Justin Hilliard looked incredible in that last game against Northwestern. You know, he was flying all over the field. So I think that is going to be the key, where I think ETN is going to give them the most problems. And I heard Jeff Hafley talking on a podcast yesterday about this, is really catching the ball out of the backfield, you know, because even if Ohio State can stop the run, if they can get ETN going with screen passes, he is a threat catching the ball out of the backfield. He's a solid receiver. You can even line him up at receiver. So that is where I think Ohio State could get hurt even more than in the running game, is if ETN can break loose or get the ball out of the backfield.
On that Clemson offense, we of course know about ETN and Trevor Lawrence. As far as their other skill guys on that offense, are there other people that they particularly should be looking out for, or do they more or less need to just watch where ETN is on the field and kind of key on that?
Yeah, I mean, there are talented players on Clemson's offense. You know, I said that they don't really have star power at wide receiver, and that's true to a point, but they still have Amari Rodgers and Cornell Powell. Like, those are still very kind of household name sort of guys, so it's a little disingenuous to say that they just do not have good wide receivers. You know, and I think it's hard to not have talented wide receivers when you have Trevor Lawrence on your roster. So, but those guys they're going to make plays, especially against the Ohio State secondary that's been a little suspect this year. But I think the big key to the games, and it was really interesting hearing Jeff Hafley talk on the podcast, because he's kind of a uniquely qualified guy to talk about this, because he obviously coached Ohio State against Clemson last year, knows how Clemson beat him last year, and then he coached against Clemson this year at Boston College, and frankly did really well. He only lost by a touchdown with a big talent deficit. So, but he was basically saying Ohio State's key to the game is stopping Travis Etienne catching the ball out of the backfield, and believe it or not, the quarterback run from Trevor Lawrence, because that is honestly what killed Ohio State last year. If you remember, there were a few times when he just broke out for big runs because they really weren't paying attention to his legs.
Yeah, you mentioned Trevor Lawrence's his legs on that one. Worth knowing, in that game last year, unofficial stat line I just got here, 107 yards rushing for Trevor Lawrence in that game, one of four times in his collegiate career rushing for more than 50 yards in a matchup. Now, talking about those skill position players and focusing really on one that you kind of mentioned, we talked about a little bit off air, I believe you kind of mentioned your tee off about Clemson this year, and that is wide receiver Justin Ross. I guess this won't be a two-part question for you. We'll start with the humorous side first. On a scale of 1 to 10, how upset is Justin Ross that he didn't declare for the NFL draft last year, considering how injury-plagued his season has been this year? And in all sincerity, it's probably cost him several million dollars. And number two, do you see that as a critical X factor in the game that he's not going to be dressing for that game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really affects them. I think for starters, it doesn't really affect them that much, because it's not like they lost him right before this game. You know, it's not the same thing as Ohio State just suddenly being out without Chris Olave for the Northwestern game. So, like, yes, it is not great that they're not going to have their top receiver and you know, like their star receiver or anything like that. But at the same time, they've been dealing with that the entire season. It's not like it's a new problem. So I think that it is going to affect them. And I think you've seen it affect their passing game now. Like they should have had a kind of a three-headed monster with Trevor Lawrence, Justin Ross, and Travis Etienne, but instead they've kind of had to make do with some less household name wide receivers. And you know, that does not mean that they've been unsuccessful in the passing game, but I think they'll miss him. And I think that it'll definitely have an impact, but it's not going to be anything different than they've seen all season. And they've had no problem throwing for 300, 400 yards in each game without him. So we'll have to see, but I think they'll be just fine in the passing game with Trevor Lawrence and the guys that they have.
Talking with Kevin Harris from 11warriors.com on the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle podcast here from the Frickers Studios. And as far as the Buckeye side of things, as far as injuries and COVID is concerned, no team really truly at full strength, especially this late into the season. How close are they going to be to a full strength team compared to the teams? You know, we saw them obviously lose a lot of guys versus Northwestern and Michigan State. What percentage of those guys are coming back?
Yeah, Ryan Day, we to be truly honest, we probably won't know until the morning of the game, because that's probably when Ohio State's going to release their status report. So Friday morning is when you're really going to know. But, you know, Ryan Day said this week that they've got, quote, a bunch of guys back. I don't know what that means. I don't know who that is. The one guy that we are very confident is Chris Olave is going to be back. You know, it seemed that's been reported. Ryan Day's hinted at it, and there's just a picture that surfaced of Chris Olave back at practice, I think on Monday. He'll be back, but outside of that, no idea. You know, that there were a few key guys. A big one was Marcus Hooker. You could definitely feel his absence in the secondary. Ronnie Hickman was injured. He wasn't a COVID scratch. He was injured in pregame before the game. So he don't know his status really either. Who else? Oh, and Baron Browning. You know, he got he for all we can tell was a COVID too. But in his place, Justin Hilliard played really, really, really well. You know, he had like the game of his career, and was by far the defensive player of the game. So even if Browning can't go, I'd imagine that Hilliard, or even if Browning can go, I'd imagine that Hilliard would get the start. So I think the big one that everyone's going to be excited about is that Chris Olave will be back. But outside of that, we'll have to see. I think the biggest one that people should be watching for is Marcus Hooker, because Ohio State did have quite a few struggles at the safety position and frankly does not have a lot of depth at any defensive back position right now. So anybody they can get back there would be huge.
And you look now at the Clemson side of things. You mentioned it we kind of talked about with Clemson that it's defensively not the same star-studded group that we've really seen in the past, where, you know, like the Clean Farrells, the Christian Wilkins, and guys like that on that defensive line. But it seems like this year it's more of a defense by committee. I mean, you mentioned that Bryce, but I mean, you also have Miles Murphy, Baylen Specter, Trenton Simpson, KJ Henry. All of those guys have been at least 3 to 4 sack performances this season. And more importantly, have been big in the tackle for a loss game. So looking at Ohio State's running attack, I mean, we saw Trey Sermon have the game of his career last time we saw him against Northwestern. And as I always like to allude to, looking at the next level for these guys as well, probably made himself a couple million dollars with his 300-plus yard performance against Northwestern. But how do you see Ohio State's running attack stacking up against not necessarily having to go against a superstar, where it's okay, we got to key our blocks against guy A and guy B to make this work, but rather it's really a superstar defense by committee? And it's weird to say, but it seems like that's the closest description for this Clemson defense.
Yeah, I think it's weird that, like you're saying, it's kind of a more by committee approach, but I do think that Ohio State should have the advantage in the trenches in the running game here. And it, just with Ohio State in general this season, it's been really hard to get a pulse of what this team is. You know, because they've only played six games. It's hard to really know what this team's identity is, what they're good at, what their strengths are. Because like for two-thirds of the year, they couldn't run the ball at all. Like two-thirds of their games, they couldn't run the ball at all and had like under 4 yards per carry. And then for the last two games, they were averaging 11 yards per carry. So like, I don't know what the true identity of this team is, but I do know that how they played in the last game with that offensive line pushing them around, pushing around one of the, frankly, the better defenses in the country. And, you know, and Trey Sermon, he was not just running into open space. He had like 190 yards after the tackle or after first contact too. So if he runs the way he does and the offensive line, you know, protects and moves people the way that they have shown that they can do this year and last year, you know, I think Ohio State should have the advantage in the trenches here. How that's actually going to play out, I really don't know. You know, I think I'd feel a lot more confident in any sort of prediction if I would have seen Ohio State play more games, but I really don't know. I think Ohio State has the talent, and that should be one of their strengths, is running the ball. Cause it's weird. This team's identity did like a complete 180 from the start of the season. At the start of the season, it seemed like it was a team that would kill you through the air, but like then would maybe get some runs after that. Like it was a pass first team to set up the run. And now it's like Ohio State has one of the best rushing attacks in the country. They lead the country and rushing yards per game and are like third in the country in yards per carry. So it's been weird, but you know, there is still strength all over the field. So I don't 100% know, but it'll be really one of the key matchups to watch.
Talking with Kevin Harris from 11warriors.com on the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle podcast from the Frickers Studios. And one thing we've kind of just a little bit glossed over thus far is, of course, the matchup between these two quarterbacks with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And, you know, both these guys have obviously been compared a lot. They both came from the state of Georgia. This is going to be the second time they now play in a college football playoff game. And I know, at least as far as the NFL draft prospects are concerned, with Jacksonville getting the first overall pick, it's all but in actual writing that they will take Trevor Lawrence. There's already been plenty of the photoshops of him in the Jaguars jersey. How do you kind of compare these two guys through their college careers? Obviously much more closer with Justin Fields being that he's at Ohio State, but we've obviously seen Trevor Lawrence on a big stage for pretty much his entire career as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is that Trevor Lawrence has had far more opportunities to really shine, I guess. You know, in Justin Fields, he's had 1 year as a starter. Trevor Lawrence has had basically three. And even this year with Justin Fields, he's only had six games. So I think from that perspective, we've just seen a lot more of Trevor Lawrence. You know, and I think that they're different quarterbacks. I think that Trevor Lawrence at this point he's probably earned the right to be the top quarterback in college football. You know, with 3 years of really solid performances, he hasn't really had that many down games, passing especially. So I think that he has earned the right to really be that number one overall pick. And Justin Fields has he had probably the worst game of his career last game, but I think it really hurts him that he does not have three seasons of film to kind of like hang his hat on. I guess he has last season and then you know, six games this season. Two of them he had a bad game last week, and then or last game, and then he threw three interceptions against Indiana, even if he was fine other than that. So, you know, two-thirds of his – or one a third of his games this year have not been super strong. So I think that it really hurts him to not have the full season. I think it really hurts him that he didn't play at all as a true freshman. But I think that he has a lot of potential, and he's always shown that he's had a lot of potential. You know, at his best, he can throw the ball just as well as Trevor Lawrence can. He's really, really, really good at making up for his mistakes. And he doesn't make the same mistake twice. He's very coachable. And so I think both of those guys, it's kind of one of those things where if you take one of them in the draft, it's not going to be the wrong pick. And so it's been interesting to watch them compete since high school, really. You know, they both came out of the same area in high school. They both had the same private quarterback trainer in high school. And, you know, they've been being compared since their sophomore years of high school. And now it's fitting that they're going to be compared going into the NFL draft. But I think just from his body of work and the more experience that Trevor Lawrence has probably earned that right to be the top quarterback in this draft.
Now, piggybacking off of that, since we are on the subject of these quarterbacks, I'm looking through stat lines and stuff like that, and I'm going to ask a question that is going to sound, I guess for all intents and purposes, moderately ridiculous, but I want to play devil's advocate on this one. Between the fact that Trevor Lawrence has been this, for all intents and purposes, anointed quarterback at Clemson after replacing Deshaun Watson, who was just incredible in his time in Clemson, really helped along with he who shall not be named on this program at their head coaching position, helping build that program up significantly. The fact that we have no Heisman trophies, no, you know, Walter Camps, things that could you make an argument that the era of Trevor Lawrence has been somewhat of a failure for Clemson, because that with the level of hype, I mean I view it in the same vein that I view Andrew Luck from his time at Stanford, where it was this foregone conclusion from the day he set foot on campus: this kid will be a number one pick in the draft, this kid is a mega superstar in the making. And yet this kid didn't win a Heisman, was not the consensus best quarterback in college at any point during his career. That you could make valid arguments that Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, and Joe Burrow at separate times were considered better quarterbacks each individual year than Trevor Lawrence. So is there part of that when we look back at Trevor Lawrence where we're going to say, okay, maybe that was a bit of a failure peer moment for him, just from an individual stat line type of thing?
I mean, if the standard is that he has to be the best quarterback ever to kind of live up to that hype, which seems to be the bar that we've set him at, then yeah, I can see the point that you're making. But like, at the end of the day, he has a national title and has got his team to the college football playoff, you know, 3 years in a row. So I think just from a his success standpoint, you know, he's done what he's supposed to do. And just by the sheer fact that he is going to be the number one pick in the draft, I'd say that it's mission accomplished as far as his development standpoint too. So I don't know. I think that like you're saying, from a statistical standpoint, like, yeah, maybe he doesn't have the numbers of Kyler Murray or Joe Burrow. You know, he doesn't even have the numbers of Mac Jones or Kyle Trask or anything like that. But I think there's something to be said about how strong he's been for three seasons. You know, like, you've even seen Justin Fields is a little inconsistency with having really two bad games this season. That doesn't happen to Trevor Lawrence. He has been solid since his freshman season all the way through this season. And you even see like guys like Joe Burrow. He was not that good before his redshirt senior season. You know, he was not anywhere near Trevor Lawrence's level his junior season. So I think you even look at guys like that and it's like, yeah, like maybe he doesn't have that one season or that one those huge stats for 1 year, but like his consistent play over 3 years makes him a very really, like, it would have draft scouts and and GMs salivating because, like, that's what you want. You want a guy that you can count on every game to do what he's supposed to every game. And even if it's not, like, the single best that you've seen season in college football, like, he's proven that he can be a guy that you draft and he's going to do what he's supposed to do for years and years and years. And I think that's what makes him a valuable draft prospect.
And looking at the game, what's your score prediction going to be for the game against Clemson? And the game technically will be second behind Bama and Notre Dame, but who's going to win that first matchup?
Yeah, so this Clemson game is really hard because, as I've mentioned, we just haven't seen a lot of Ohio State. So I think there's ways that this game could play out. There are a ton of ways that this game could play out that I would not be shocked by. But I honestly think, if I'm just basing it off of what I've seen, I think Clemson probably should win in a close one. It's going to be a high scoring game one way or another, but I would pick Clemson, like 41-38. But like I said, like, this game could go in a number of ways and I wouldn't be surprised. I think Ohio State has shown so many strengths, just not all at once, if that makes sense. They've shown the ability to pass for like 350, 400 yards with Justin Fields. They've shown the ability to run for 331 yards with Trey Sermon. They've shown the ability to hold an opponent to negative yardage rushing. And they've just shown so many strengths that if they come out and dominate a game in each of those areas, like, they could win this game by, multiple touchdowns if they play to their potential in every area. But at the same time, they've also shown a few weaknesses as well. So it really, after six games, I don't know what this Ohio State team is. So I would not be surprised by really anything on New Year's Day. But based on what we've seen so far, I think Clemson should have been a little more consistent. And I think that it's an advantage them having played almost double the games as Ohio State has and to really just establish their identity. So I do think that I'd have to pick Clemson just unbiasedly. And as far as that other game, I mean, it's going to be Alabama. I don't know. Like, that's just a formality. Alabama's like a 20-point favorite in a college football playoff game. I think Notre Dame looked like they didn't even belong in the playoff when they played Clemson. And Alabama has been decidedly the most dominant team in the country this whole season. So I think Alabama is going to win, and it's not really going to be close. It might be close through two quarters or something like that. But it's going to be one of those pressure cooker games where you're like, Notre Dame's hanging around. It's 17-10. And then the next time you look up, it's going to be like 38-10. So that's just what Alabama does. And I think that they're going to cruise to a win there.
Real quick before we let you go, I have a two-part question. First of all, Voldemort in Gomer Pyle form, known as Dabo Sweeney, justified having Ohio State as his 11th ranked team in the country in his final coaches poll. So my two-part question is this. One, is Dabo aware that he's giving Ohio State a lot of chalkboard and whiteboard material to use as motivation? And two, how much better would this matchup be for you if Brett
Bielema,
Bielema, thank you, your favorite coach of all time, was the head coach at Clemson?
I think it pains me to say it. I think Dabo is far more entertaining than even Bielema. So. I think that's, we're good on that front. But Dabo actually addressed your question in his press conference yesterday. Somebody asked him, you're playing Ohio State. Like, didn't you think that it would be a little, like, make sense to just, like, rank them normally? And he basically was like, he did his Dabo thing where he pretended that he was like the moral, like, high ground, and he was like, sometimes it's not easy to do what's right, and you don't always take the easy way, you always have to do the right thing, and what's right is right, and this is what I did. So basically he tried to play the moral high ground, and he was doing the noble thing by ranking Ohio State at number 11, even though he knew that he would get some backlash from Columbus. So that's just who Dabo is. Yeah, he's always going to be that. You can always count on him to be that. But, you know, whatever he does, whatever ridiculous thing he does, you can be certain that he thinks it is the very good thing and correct thing to do, which is way more infuriating than otherwise.
This has been Kevin Harris from 11warriors.com. We, of course, follow you on Twitter at Kevinus. Kevin, thank you, as always, for taking the time to talk with us. We'll catch up sometime next year and next week to break down either an Ohio State national championship game against Bama or Notre Dame, or recap what happened in that game against Clemson.
Sounds good. Talk to you guys later.
With that, we'll briefly step aside for a quick timeout. We'll be back in a moment here on the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle podcast from the Fricker Studios.
Freaking chicken chunks, freaking chicken chunks, freaking chicken chunks, freaking chicken chunks. $29.99 gets you 4 pounds of freaking chicken chunks. Get the four sauces too. Get the four sauces too.
Ring in the season with 4 pounds of frickin' chicken chunks. Buy a $25 Frickers gift card and get 5 frickin' bonus bucks free. The ho-ho home for fun, food, sports, and spirits is Frickers.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Tremaines, orthopedic surgeon here at NWO. Shoulder pain can be one of the most debilitating conditions a person can have. During my medical training in the 1990s, I witnessed a revolution in the surgical treatment of shoulder pain. Over a decade ago, I brought this experience to Finlay, which has allowed decreased pain and quicker recovery to full function in my patients. So whether you've had a traumatic injury from a fall or the gradual wear and tear from overuse, don't let shoulder pain sideline you. Let the professionals at NWO help you get back in the game.
Almost out of time here on the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle podcast. Lance Morris, Matt Cobman here with you. A few things in sports I want to touch on before we go. Matt, we talked before we got on the air on our game on Monday, but former Ohio State Buckeye Dwayne Haskins released by Washington after just under 2 years with the team. He was, of course, their first round pick a couple seasons ago. The writing was on the wall for the last couple of weeks, and then the things that took place over this past weekend was the final nail in that coffin. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, he's 23, still a former first-round pick. Someone's going to sign him. Someone's going to try and rehab him and his reputation, try and build him back up, because at the end of the day, he was a first-round pick for a reason in the NFL. Having said that, the writing was on the Gentleman Club wall for the better portion of the last week, that you knew it was coming. And I got to tip my hat to Ron Rivera. That is a gutsy play a year after the team drafts him, even though he had no connection with the draft pick itself. A year after drafting a guy that you cut him because he has become that much of a headache. Usually that's solved with a new coach by just benching them, kind of relegating them to the dark confines of the back of the depth chart. I give him a lot of credit. That was a gutsy move, and I do hope that Haskins gets a chance with another team at some point to at least rehab his image, because he's a good kid. He is a hard worker at times from everything we've heard from his time in college. You don't want to see this be his last sports legacy, being cut two seasons into his pro career.
Buffalo in position for the 2 seed in the AFC with that big win over New England, thanks in part to Josh Allen developing into a pretty good quarterback. I'll be honest, I didn't really see that one coming before his career started. And of course, the fact that they were gifted Stephon Diggs, who's leading the league in receiving yards.
Yeah, they were gifted Stephon Diggs. And I'll be the first one to own this, because I am very proud of myself. Josh Allen is one of the few hits that I've had when it comes to NFL draft predictions. When he came out, I said point blank, and I'll eat crow on this one because I love Baker Mayfield now. I was upset because I wanted to be Josh Allen. The way I figure Josh Allen's ceiling is, like I just said earlier, Peyton Manning. That is the kid's ceiling. He's got a cannon for an arm. He has developed accuracy, if we're going to use the correct terminology there. And he's just a dangerous, dangerous all-around player. He really, truly is. So I'm excited to see what Josh Allen can do. I personally think for the NFL, between Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, at least for the time being, until the wheels come off the tracks for him, Tua and Justin Herbert. I think as we're seeing this end of the Brady, Rodgers, Manning era of quarterbacks in the NFL, we're seeing a brand new crop of legitimate megastar quarterbacks that are going to make the NFL fun to watch for years. And Josh Allen is near the top of that list right there with Mahomes, with Mayfield, and for my money, with Herbert.
We've got a hot take for you on this one, and this is different than what we were just talking about. Ryan Fitzpatrick, he brings the Dolphins back from the dead in their win over the Raiders over the weekend. I happened to flip on that game, you know, pretty much just in time once the Raiders got the ball, and they opted to run down time and kick a field goal. Here's a mind-blowing idea. When you have a chance to score a touchdown, score the damn touchdown. Like, holy crap, that was they could have scored three different times. They opt to waste time instead and kick the field goal, which does give them the lead, but makes it to where Miami still can win the game on their own. I don't understand why you have to outthink yourselves. If you can score a touchdown and it gives you the lead, score the touchdown.
Yeah, I can't stress this enough before I give my portion of this take. I love John Gruden. I love him to death. As a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, he was the coach that got us our first Super Bowl. Also, as a Bucs fan, I can kind of admit, really, that was Tony Dungy's first Super Bowl. Just John Gruden brought the offense over to finally make it work. But I love John Gruden. He's great. He's entertaining. He's so good for the NFL. And that game was so much proof that the game has passed him by at this stage. It's that was strategic football circa 2004, when it was power running, the ground and pound, the slow grind type of games where running down the clock and kicking the field goal was enough to win. That's not enough to win anymore. And Ryan Fitzmagic, I will not call him Fitzpatrick because he is Fitzmagic, that he is just indicative of how the game has changed, because he's changed his game to go along with it. He's no longer the game manager that you saw when he first started in Buffalo or in some of his other stops over the years. I'm going to throw it 1,000 miles an hour and I'm going to chuck this thing as far downfield as I can throw it. And let's just see what happens. So in that game, it was a tale of two different types of players from those past era, or different types of personalities from that past era. Gruden holding on to it and Fitzmagic adapting to it. And that's why Fitzmagic and the Dolphins won. That's why I think, for my money, Ryan Fitzpatrick should be the starter for this game that they have against Buffalo as well. Let him close out this season. Tua is good. I don't think there's a problem with Tua. He's just a little bit more of a game manager right now. Let Fitzmagic do his thing. You get 3.5 games of Fitzmagic being good before the wheels come off the tracks. You're only on game 1/2 right now. Let him do his thing.
That'll just about do it for this podcast edition of the show from the Fricker Studios on the NWO Orthopedics Sports Huddle. Big shout out one more time to Kevin Harris from 11warriors.com. Always gracious with his time to talk with Matt and I every week. For Matt Common, that will do it for this edition of the show. From all of us at Classic Hits 96.7 WBVI, along with ESPN 1430 AM and 105.7 FM WFOB, we wish you all a happy new year.